page. Just go to 702 on Facebook. And you can do so now, in fact, to see my conversation with our Friday profile. Earlier on, I had a little bit of a confession. I remember coming to work, looking through the papers, going into the Times, and they had this little story at the bottom. And it was all about this second season of Lockdown. And of course, that in addition to the cast was the one and only Pamela Nomvete. And throughout the day, I just kept thinking, I was like, finally, oh my goodness, I think Game of Thrones had ended. So something else that I could throw myself into in a much loved show like Lockdown. So I wasn't sure which I was most excited about, seeing you back on screen or that Lockdown was back. But the two together was a fantastic highlight to my day. Pamela, wow, what an incredible job.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. It's lovely to be here with you as
Yes. It's a great pleasure to have you back. So it's goodbye, Ntsiki Lukhele, as people have been saying on my timeline. Forget Ntsiki.
Oh, that's good.
And say hello to Governor, Prison Governor Deborah Banda.
Make sure, you know, the other day I saw something on Twitter and somebody said, oh, it's really funny, you know, my family members are calling Deborah Deborah. And they're going, ha, ha, ha. And I'm thinking, no, that is her name. She is Deborah.
Because that's what it is in South Africa.
Yes,
she's that Deborah. Way, we say it that way. We say it that way.
Yeah.
My goodness. So being a fan of Lockdown, you also were a fan.
Yeah.
You were watching season one as a fan.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say a fan as yet. I watched it because it was, I'm sure you know the story by now, but I was communicating with Lorsha Cooper on Instagram because I'd just sort of been told by my nephews, auntie, you have to get onto Instagram. Oh, wow. So I thought, okay, yeah, let me do this Instagram thing. Found her and then thought, yeah, what is she doing? Saw this thing with Lockdown. But it was just the logo, actually. But I thought, gosh, that looks interesting. And of course, at that point, I'm thinking, what should I attach myself to? What should I come back doing? So checked it out on YouTube, got back to Lorsha, said, oh my gosh. Yes. Then I became a fan because I thought, this is amazing.
Yes.
This show. And I thought, I can't believe that my agent, when I'm going, you know, what do you think? What didn't mention this show? So I said to Lorsha, hey, my friend, you're amazing in this. And the show is extraordinary. I mean, you know, who are your producers? I'm just wondering, even if I can come on for an episode or or even just a cameo for 2 minutes and I come in, I'd like to be part of it. And then she opened the door to the communication with the producer and Mandla N. And before I knew it, they said, yeah, there's actually something for you in season two.
She is the Bona Banda. Gosh. And people think that you had stopped acting, but you hadn't.
No, you hadn't.
I think the last time we were here, we reflected a little bit on Coronation Street.
Yes.
But you've been doing other things as well. You played the part of Leah Tutu.
Yes, in a film called Forgiven that was actually shot in Cape Town. And I played Leah to Forrest Whitaker's Bishop. You know, I think it's one of the things, though, that we have to kind of get right.
Yeah.
Because it was a British production company that made the film. And by the way, lots of South Africans in that cast, good roles. I mean, in fact, mine, to be honest, was one of the smallest.
Okay.
And we still haven't seen it. I know that it's already premiered in the British Film Festival in the UK because my sister was like, your film, and went to see it. And she says, it's really beautiful. It's fantastic. And so, I mean, you know, we had no idea. And I was sort of communicating with my agent to say, this is mad because it is a South African story. It was shot on South African soil. In fact, when I was asked to be on it, it was as a South African actress. And it's absurd that it's like unknown. It's completely disappeared in the wind.
You're right.
You know, it's like a foreign film. And I just think that's bizarre.
Even with local productions made with local money, we tend to see them much, much later after they've done the festival circuit.
It should be. This should be. In fact, you know what's irritating about that is because back in my day, that was one of the biggest discussions I'd had because of the film I did, Zulu Love Letter. And I just didn't understand how that film didn't premiere here first.
Yes.
And even at a festival in Venice, one of the people who had watched it came up to me and said, this is a most beautiful film. What is the response from the people in your country? And I said, let me tell you something. They haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, even when they did, it was vague. I mean, I think very few people have actually seen Zulu Love Letter because it didn't really get a platform, you know?
Yes.
But it has had tremendous platform around the world, especially in Europe.
Look at movies like Vaya. They were shortlisted, or our submissions for the Oscars.
Yeah.
And they did the festival circuit before we could see them. It hasn't even opened properly. It was just a 7-day run this year. But then next year we get to see it properly. So Tell Me Sweet Something started a conversation. So we need to keep this conversation going.
We really
to
have
prioritize
to.
This particular audience. So, and you also did Kingmakers, right?
Yes, Kingmakers, for which actually, again, I won the best actress for the African Oscars. They're called the African Oscars, and they're the Nollywood Critics Choice Awards that is held in LA. So yeah, so you know, I won best actress and I flew out to LA to this award ceremony. You know, and I was talking to somebody recently about that, because they were sort of going, you know, it's just fantastic. And it is fantastic. You go there, and I tell you, I think Nigerians have got it right. Because when you go to that ceremony, I mean, it's huge. And there's loads of Americans there, especially African Americans, because they see it as one of their platforms. Here, it's not even, you know, nobody even, it should have been like, I think. But because it was Africa and it was Nollywood, it's ignored. I think it's bizarre. And there, I had all the sort of attention and excitement there. And I happened to be doing a play in the UK at the time. So I flew there from the UK. When I arrived back in the theater to start my rehearsals, they were losing it. Everybody was going mad. You know, oh my God, oh my God. You did it. And I thought, and there's total silence from my home country. I've tried to tell people. I've sent messages. I've said, look, this is what's happened. People are asking where I am. Well, as you see, I'm still working. And guess what? And I thought, what a shame, because if it was the Oscars, it would have been everywhere.
Yes, yes. So it's interesting where we look for that affirmation,
where we
hold as the gold standard.
Precisely. And in fact, this woman I was talking to, she was even saying, you know, and it's great that they have this, but isn't it too bad that they call it the African Oscars? Because it is still needing that approval.
The
it's
Oscars,
still needing
attaching Oscars to it.
That recognition.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe, because, you know, FESPACO Festival is huge and has been around for years. And I even said it on Facebook somewhere, that why don't we invest in that festival and make that sort of central, and it becomes an African festival that is recognized globally. But it comes from us, and then it gets a global platform and recognition.
Yes.
That, for my money, would be the way to go. So you don't even have to reinvent the wheel. It's right there.
And as you say, it's been going for so, so long.
Yeah.
So you haven't stopped acting. People might not have seen you on South African screens for some time. Coronation Street, Kingmakers, Lea Tutu part with Forest Whitaker. So lots has been going on.
Yeah.
But you had to decide. There was a point where you wanted to decide whether to come back to South African screens. What was that conversation with yourself like?
It's a really good question, because I, you know, when I was having the conversation, I hadn't admitted consciously that I was a bit nervous about coming back in, because my relationship with South Africa and South African screens was so tumultuous.
Yes.
You know, yes, glorious on one level, horrendous on another level. So I just thought, do I even have the stamina? And by then, of course, because I'm a practicing Buddhist, I'd literally rebuilt myself. You know, I really have, and have continued to do so. It's a very exciting journey.
Yes.
And so, but I still had to ask myself the question, am I ready for this? Because actually, I don't even know what the response is going to be. You know, are they going to be looking at me under a microscopic lens?
Yeah.
And criticizing this is every move I make. And I thought, but I hadn't gone in depth. It was afterwards, when I'd made the decision And then I got myself an agent. And then I thought, that's why I've been staying on the periphery. Because yes, I am nervous. Of course I'm scared. Because I'm thinking, do I have the stamina to face whatever's going to come? You know, because I didn't know. One way or another, it could have been horribly negative. It could have been. So I thought, just do I have the stamina? Am I really? Have I really rebuilt myself? Am I really more about, I just know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's what counts, and not what is everybody else's opinion about me.
Right.
So it was, yeah, as you see, it was like,
you actually preempted what I also wanted to talk to you about, because, your star was at the top. You were right at the top when you had that Ntsiki Lukele, character on, Generations, right? But behind the scenes, as you've covered in your book, yes, you were dealing with a lot of crushing psychological, marital and financial problems.
Yeah.
You gave quite an account, and very brave, as we've, discussed before in that biography. So you give that account. But there are also a few things that remained unresolved, you know, having read the book.
That's right.
And I wondered about the work that has happened since the end of the book to where we are now.
Yeah.
Because all of those things had an impact on your self-esteem.
You're so right. That is such a valid question. And I think it's good, because I'm sure a lot of actresses, especially African, black African actresses, face a lot of challenges in the industry. And it's all around self-esteem, because your self-esteem can get knocked from a very glorious height. But it is that thing of absolutely being clear about yourself and trusting that you do what you do for whatever reason you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, for me, you know, whether it's acknowledged or not, one thing I am is I'm true to the roles that I'm playing.
Yes.
100%. You know, those people need me to tell their story, and I will do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get caught up in the other voices going on, and then you forget why you're doing this. And then it becomes about that, you know, which is why I lost my way in the first place, because it was more about the image I'm presenting. Is it the right image? Instead of, no, I'm telling a story for a reason, because actually every story in one way or another is going to transform a life.
Yes, like the separation, I think, in this
it's
industry
really
is very key.
It's really important, isn't it? Yeah.
So becoming a practicing Buddhist,
yes,
that was clearly a part of this rebuild,
yes,
of the self-esteem, of dealing with depression and so on.
Completely. And you know, it's so amazing that we're talking about it, because I've just come back from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
On one of my Buddhist courses that was for, it's like an intense 7 days. So, you know, I'm sort of back from there, and you're asking me about Buddhism. And yet again, I'm going, this is an extraordinary practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know often people go, oh, you know, oh yes, another foreign religion. It so isn't.
You should see her face. She's almost like, sit down. Let me tell you before you jump to conclusions. Hush.
Truly. And I'm not gonna, otherwise, yeah, it's like, show ends in a minute. but it is so about one's authenticity. So that means it, you're able through this practice to Nammyo Horenge Kyo, it to tap into every aspect of yourself. But embrace that and be able to say, yeah, but I'm a Buddha, you know, no matter what. And if I'm a Buddha, I'm a Buddha as I am. I don't have to be this extraordinary human that's all good, because that's unreal.
Mm.
I mean, I'm a human being and I've got all these levels. But if I focus on my highest and most positive self, then all that negative self gets transformed into positive action. So for instance, my fall, my story, now I'm using as a positive tool to empower others and to build self-esteem in others.
I want to get to that, because you're doing great work with up-and-coming actresses. We'll get to that after the break. If you've just joined us, my guest is the one and only acclaimed actress, Pamela Nomvete, and we're exploring her journey, almost the second chapter, the second half.
It's like that, yeah.
And she plays the part of Deborah Banda on Lockdown. Right, we have very little time remaining with our Friday profile, Pamela Nomvete. And gosh, it sounds like it's been a fascinating journey of a spiritual discovery. Mm-hmm. But I wondered what kind of view or lens you approached Deborah Banda with, because she seems like a very complex character. And so far, we're seeing that there's a lot that she's dealing with.
Yeah.
She seems to have an interest in young children, a paedophilic kind of interest in young children.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a history with another inmate.
Exactly. Well, number one, I'm delighted that you're describing her as complicated and complex, because that's what's brilliant about that role,
mm-hmm.
in that she's an unknown entity. And I think from what I'm reading, the audiences are sort of struggling with her because there's nothing to really hook.
Yes, like what her. Is it?
Yeah, what is it? What is it about?
What's her
Achilles
heel?
Oh, she's creepy. Mm. Oh, she's, you know, but with just slightly disturbed because they can't, she's tangible.
Yes.
And she's not. And that's why I really enjoyed playing her. However, yes, the paedophilic tendencies, that was one of the things when the breakdown for the part came and I thought, what? Had a conversation with my agent. And then I got in touch with a psychologist that deals with sexual violence and the whole area of female predators, which is, and I've watched loads of documentaries. I mean, I did so much research on this because I really had to, I know, right? And it was like that. But what I realized and what I learned from a lot of, because there were, and I had to ask the question to the writers, is she a paedophile or is she a sexual molester? Because I discovered there is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
A paedophile is someone, yes, that has this attraction for children, sexual attraction. And many paedophiles don't even act on it because it's like a sickness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So a lot of them are now coming out and talking about it. And, you know, at first I was like, ugh. And then I thought, no, this is necessary for the protection of our children.
Right.
We've got to understand this.
So you put your discomfort aside.
I had to, because I thought, actually, this is an important subject to have a platform to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I pray that people have the courage to open up that door and start dialoguing, because it's for the sake of our children. You know, Deborah is the head of a prison. She's respected. The woman, as you see, is very efficient at her job,
mm-hmm.
in the other aspects of her life, but she's got this terrible affliction.
Mm.
And these people, and there are the women, loads of them, they are teachers, they are our teachers.
Mm-hmm.
They could be the person that's looking after your children, the domestic worker. They can be, you know, and it is women as well as men.
Yes, yes.
There are women there too. Mm. And for the health of our societies, this is a really important subject to open up.
Right.
So I'm glad Deborah is...
Yeah, we're watching. We're watching with just this bated breath as the story unfolds. It's just so gripping, lockdown. So it's a great production. But let's quickly, before we get to headlines, we have about a minute left to look at the program that you run to empower young actresses.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a program that I slowly ended up creating. And it was that I wanted not only to pass on my skill,
mm-hmm.
but to also use elements of acting to empower people. And of course, as I started it, I've come across a lot of young actresses. Some of them are working. So the dialogues we have are even about the industry and what they're facing and how they're dealing. And of course, I've walked it. So I realized, oh my gosh, this is a really important contribution to make.
Mm.
So I'm sort of in the process of hopefully developing that into more.
Yes. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you, ma'am. I think it's important
work. And you did say that after your experience on Generations, that you want to have more transparency about what it's like being in your position and to share what you've experienced with younger people. So this is clearly a follow through with that. So do read her book, Dancing to the Beat of the Drum, and also check her out on Lockdown. She is one of the most arresting actresses in this country. Like, you are just captivated and consumed by Pamela Nomvete whenever she's on screen, and she makes a fantastic addition to one of the most brilliant shows to have come out of South Africa, and it's called Lockdown, Mondays at 8 p.m.
Yes,
on Mzansi Magic.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Wonderful, and you're so wonderful.
Always
being
riveting.
On your show.
Always so riveting to be with.